This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. I am so happy to welcome to the program someone whose book I admire so much, and as we're heading into the anniversary of 9/11, I was looking for books that I wanted to talk about. And this book particularly touched my heart. And, you know, it's going to be a very emotional time for all of us, but for no one can quite compare to what my next guest went through. She had a four-month-old baby. And I will let her tell the story, but I am really grateful and thankful that Lisa Luckett can join me today to talk about her beautiful book, The Light in 9/11, Shocked by Kindness, Healed by Love. Hello, Lisa.
Hey, Patsy. It's so nice to meet you. Thank you for having me.
Well, as I said, you know, there were a lot of books, of course, for 9/11, and I can't cover all of them, but I wanted, particularly here a few days before the anniversary, to have you on. But now, of course, with all that has happened, I'm not sure if our conversation will change a little bit, because your story is one of love. And I'll let you tell people, because even now, when I think about it, my eyes just well up with tears when I think of you holding your baby and learning about what happened to your husband. So I'll let you say it in your own words, and then we'll talk about how this book came about and what you're hoping to do with this book.
Well, thanks so much. You know, 20 years later, it's amazing how much time has flown. And my mother, loved ones in the towers. My husband Teddy worked in the North Tower, which is the first one that was hit. He was on the 105th floor. He worked for the company Cantor Fitzgerald, who lost 658 people that day. So Cantor has a unique story. It was a very young group of brokers, and so everybody, a lot of children in this. You know, the interesting thing in that day was, you know, the shock that we all saw when we turned on the television. And my husband, I have a different experience of 9/11 because my husband was in the tower in the first bombing in 1993. So 9/11 was not my first experience of terrorism. And which is an interesting thing, and the reason I bring it up is because what I've learned in looking back is life prepares you for your life. So I was prepared in this very odd way that to handle 9/11 in the way that I did or that it actually came to me. So the second piece was that my mother-in-law worried about my husband excessively to the point where she would tell me that he was going to have a heart attack every time I saw her. So he was a 40-year-old guy working a stressful job. We just had our third child. And, you know, yes, he was, in fact, a walking heart attack. So what it did to me was I would run his death through my mind over and over again to the point where I could be laying at night in bed next to him and weeping with the idea of him leaving me in this way. So the morning of 9/11, when the proverbial smoke cleared, if you will, the shock and the buildings had fallen, all of a sudden I found myself in this very unusual place of being very calm and very clear because I had been prepared. I'd thought this through so much. And to do a metaphor would be that I was standing back from the edge in this offensive position. I was like a weevil. I wobbled, but I didn't fall down. So the greater message to people listening with regard to all trauma is and all difficult experiences is they're actually preparing us to help with what comes next. And if we can shift to see our life and our struggles in a different way, in a new way, in the sense that we are getting wiser and stronger with each of the difficult experiences we have.
Well, you know, has your perspective change since the news of what has happened in Afghanistan? How has that affected you?
That's a great question, and I do want to bring this forward because so much of what 9/11 is the memory of the attacks, right? Not what came after the attacks, which was the beauty, the grace, the humanity, the incredible strength, the patriotism of us unifying together in this collective experience. Because 9/11 was a collective trauma. It happened to all of us. It changed the world as we know it, much like COVID has changed the world as we've known it, and it's collective. It's affected everyone. So those things need to be high-spotted here in the sense of looking at it from a different perspective. With Afghanistan, my heart is broken for everyone that went there, that gave up their lives, that the money that we spent, the efforts that we had in trying to bring democracy to another part of the world. But part of the problem is, and I believe it's a bigger problem, is the fact that I don't know how much we ask. I don't know it with our best, greatest intentions, and we all know what the road to hell is paved with, right, is good intentions. Did we ask about what they wanted before we went in? And, you know, are we doing the due diligence as a country to be sure that people want what we're offering? And are we doing the study around what their culture differences are compared to ours? And I believe, actually, and this is going to be very edgy for me to say to the audience, but my point of 9/11 is what I see in our country today is we are still very much stuck in a victimization mode, that this happened to us. And we are going to be stuck in that place until we decide to choose to see it in a new way. Not that we deserve to be attacked in that way, but what did we do that made them angry? What did we do that possibly set things off? And until we start taking some responsibility for everything that's in our own personal lives to our national position, is that life isn't happening to us. Life is actually happening for us. And if we can begin to see things and take responsibility for our own actions in bringing that experience, the humility that comes from that, the vulnerability, which is actually a superpower of admitting that we were wrong or that we said something wrong or that it landed on that other person in such a way that they took it differently than we intended it, everybody's doing their best, but sometimes the best can be viewed very differently. So Afghanistan is a very sad moment in our history. And, you know, 20 years, it passed through 3 presidents before Biden, you know, all of which did not want to deal with this. They knew it was an end, much like Vietnam. They knew it wasn't right. But pulling the plug was way too hard. And it just breaks my heart for the people that served there, that gave their lives and changed their lives. And, you know, I just hope we can remember them and honor them. That's the piece that we could do a better job of.
Well, your book talks about courage. And certainly all of the young people, the young men and women who joined the military after 9/11, they had enormous amount of courage. They wanted to do something right. And my heart goes out for them. And I know that, you know, your book is about love and about goodness and kindness. Where do you come down now with everything that, I mean, do you still feel hopeful?
Well, even my hope has been challenged. And it's really about the misinformation around the world regarding COVID and how all facts are being spun to serve the argument that you like best. It's not objective. And, you know, we are in more of a fear, well, we all know it's a fear-based world, and the media is serving the fear, and social media allows people to be fed what they want to hear rather than the whole picture, back to kind of seeing our own parts and things, right? So my book is about kindness and love, but my book is really about healing trauma, any trauma, meaning the healing comes when you can see the good that comes with the bad, that it's the silver lining that light, that's the light metaphor. The light in 9/11 is the silver lining that came flooding over me in the years that followed. So a silver lining or the good in a situation may not be at the magnitude of the bad, right? My husband died, our world was attacked, but we had this incredible kindness that followed. And this magnanimous aspect of the goodness of humanity showed up. And my point is that shows up all the time within any trauma, small or large, personal to cultural. So, for example, I had breast cancer in 2009, and it happened all over again. And at that time, my first after I got the shock of the word cancer, which we should have many other words for because not all cancer is a death sentence. Many and most are now very treatable, but was, did I and can you build a skill set for trauma management? And the answer is absolutely. So, but that takes the opportunity to look at our own behavior, look at our experience around what has happened and who shows up for us. And very often, it's not the people you think are going to be there, your mother, father, sister, brother, best friends, because if it's a big trauma, like in the case of 9/11 and losing my husband, my family and his family were blown apart by it. His death was their loss, not my loss. So you know, I didn't get their help because they were managing their own grief, their own shock. But the world would say to me, "Oh, is your how's your family? Are they helping you?" But and the answer was no. They're actually not. They're kind of making it worse. So these assumptions we make from our culture, because we don't have a lot of education around what emotional reactivity is correct and what is not correct. For example, we went to war, boots on the ground, in Iraq, not Afghanistan, within weeks of 9/11. And in that moment, Teddy was dead, the world was coming apart, I literally had the lucid thought of, why are we trying to thread a needle with a shotgun? That is not how we're going to address the problem. And 20 years later, we've arrived at that same thing.
Well, let's step back for a minute. When you were that day, explain to my listeners, because for me it was very traumatic to read about, how you saw this happen. And then where did you find this strength? What was in your own background that was able, I don't know, you found some way to pull this together, because a lot of people didn't?
It's a great question. It's an answer that people are going to potentially not be able to receive, but I hope they can. So the day happened, I had taken my daughter, who was in second grade, so I had a 7-year-old, a 4-year-old, and a 4-month-old. I had taken her to school a little late. She had not been feeling well. So when I walked in the door a little before 9, my phone was ringing. When I picked it up, my friend said, "Lisa, what tower is Teddy in?" And I said, "Well, the one with the antenna on it. Why?" And she said, and I quote, "Well, turn on the television because a plane just hit it and took off the top 15 floors."
Uh-oh.
She didn't ask me what floor he was on, which was 2 floors from the top. So what she had basically told me was he was dead on the ground. And that was the first piece of misinformation that I received in the hundreds and hundreds of thousands that followed of 9/11. Because the report we get is always shadowed by personal involvement of the person reporting it on the news, in our own lives. Okay, so that started, then of course my house was streaming and full of people. And, The morning went on, and more people came, and the phone was ringing, and I was trying to find Teddy, and the cell phones went down in New York, and just the chaos of the whole thing. And I went upstairs to Nurse Timmy, and I walked into my room, and it was silent. My room was an oasis, and the TV wasn't on, and it gave me a moment to regroup until a friend of mine walked in and said, "Lisa, the first tower had fallen," and he said, "Lisa, Teddy's building fell down." And I turned on the television to see that it was the South Tower that had fallen, not the North. So by the time the North Tower fell, I had 30 people in my bedroom with me watching the television in real time. and I watched it fall.
Oh.
Now, one of the things that's really, really important to think about with 9/11, if I can leave you with one of nothing else, we as a global audience, 80 countries lost people in the towers and in the Pentagon and Shanksville. 80 countries out of 200. Okay, so it was a global story immediately. It was gave us enough time from the first plane coming in and the second plane and before the building fell, time for everyone to turn the television on in their own living room so that we all watched it happen in real time. Hollywood, sensational Hollywood, couldn't come close. I've said this to people and they get very offended, but the truth is the terrorists hit a home run, man. They couldn't have done it any better. And it caught us so far off guard, we thought we were untouchable between two oceans and two benign neighbors, and we will never be that naive again. So the idea that so later that morning, buildings had fallen. I came down after nursing Timmy into a sea of people. And I could see the dust particles like dancing in the sunlight coming through the front window. And I was in this different place. And what I know now, and this is the part people may not love hearing or be able to receive, but I really in my heart hope they do, I was being guided by something other than me. A higher power had come in. I wasn't spiritual. I was always more interested in spirituality, but wasn't trained. I never felt good in my religious experience. It just didn't make me feel good to be there. And all of a sudden, I just knew to trust myself because the world as we knew it was broken completely. It had shifted on its axis. No one was going to know what to do. And something inside me told me to put my head down and go and do the next thing in front of me and not look left or right. All that mattered was getting my kids through this. It got very, very simple. And just to do one thing and do the next thing, and that it would be, and I quote, 2 years to a new normal. I don't know how I knew that. I just knew it. No one has talked about 20 years ago, new normal wasn't even in our conversation. Those words had never been put together in my life. But I knew them, and I knew the truth of them. So that began this journey of enlightenment. That I was basically, I had people surrounding me to help me. But there was really nothing anyone can do, but all they wanted to do was help me. And I'm a woman raised in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and I don't want anybody's help. I can do everything myself, right? We never ask for help. To ask for help, you are shamed with weakness. We are supposed to do it all, right? That was our mentality. But the truth is, I could see their pain. I was in this different place where I would need to help me too. And a voice in my head said, Lisa, let them help you. And in that moment of surrender, I realized I let go and everything literally shifted. And in came the love and in came, and I let people come in and see us and touch us and be with us. I didn't shut my door. Whatever they needed to do, I allowed them in because I recognize now that if you block someone from helping you in your time of crisis, they're witnessing it and they're projecting themselves into your situation. There, but for the grace of God, go I. It could have been anyone living in New York who was in that tower at the wrong time. So they all saw themselves and they saw it in me. And so by me allowing them to help me, it was helping feed their souls. It was helping them to heal.
Well, you know, it just gives me shivers when I think about it. And I so even, you know, now after this debacle in Afghanistan and watching it, and I keep thinking, where is the love? Where is the kindness in humanity? And I think that your book, you know, it's a beautifully written book, first of all, and they've done a wonderful job with the cover. I think just looking at the cover itself is a sort of a calming thing. You know, I stare at the cover and I think, yeah. And the title of the book is, of course, The Light in 9/11, and nobody ever thinks about that. The light in 9/11, shocked by kindness, healed by love. And it's wonderful that you found that. And of course, now your children are, well, you know, 20 years later, it's so hard to imagine what they've gone through. And when you look at it now, when you say, when you did your research, you know, when you were looking at why this happened, did you come out with any conclusions? I mean, where did your mind go when you were trying to understand why this happened?
First of all, thank you for your kindness around the book and the cover. It means a lot to me. And the cover was drawn by a good friend who knew Teddy well. So that was a really nice parallel project together. Okay, so here's the answer to that. It wasn't my mind. It came through me. So 3 weeks after or so, I had this, as we've all felt, that warmth, that power, if you will, that we feel in our stomachs. And it kept building, and it was like being pulled. I was being pulled into doing something. And I could see that all of it was like this warrior aspect, but a warrior of love, not angry. I actually never, ever got angry at the terrorists, because I got so angry in 1993, but nobody else cared in 93. We went back into those buildings arrogantly without thinking about it, and surprised 8 years later when it happened again. All right, so that's honestly on us. But so I never had to deal with the anger again. I only felt this love, because I was showered with love and kindness that I'd never received in any time in my life. So this need, this warrior aspect of making something good come from 9/11, because I could not let Teddy and all the others die in vain. I had to do this. I had to do something to countermand the terrorism, or the terrorists are going to win. And that was not okay with me. So in this abstract way of just, how do I figure this out? How do I figure out and make something good come from this? Was to figure out the why of everything. Meaning, I had to take my life to the analyst's couch to dissect and look at and pull apart all of my life experiences, all of the relationships, all of the events that had shaped me up until that day. And it was a very painful 40 years. I had a family, a community that was highly traumatized, and honestly wasn't nice. So the great irony around 9/11 for me when I wrote the book is when I realized 9/11 actually healed me. It healed a lifetime of pain because people were nice to me. So I had this crazy awakening breakthrough 4 years into therapy. And it wasn't about therapy around pointing fingers and blaming. It was trying to understand the root cause of why I was having the experiences I was, why I saw the world as I did, why I was so misunderstood, why I couldn't understand. So the shame around therapy, the shame around mental health was huge then, but I couldn't care. And 9/11 gave me this unusual position of being in this kind of gilded cage. I would hear myself quoted, even as I was a 9/11 widow, like I knew more than someone else. I didn't know anything more, but people elevated me. And that elevation and the idea that I knew I was dealing with something bigger than anyone could ever comprehend, in this experience, I had this vision, this early vision and understanding that things are going to be different forever now. So I just went with it. I couldn't care what people thought. So after being in this box, trying to fit in society's box for 40 years, unsuccessfully, 9/11 shot me out of that box like a catalyst for change. And out of that box I stayed, and that is what's delivered me here today.
And
myself.
As a result of that, you have formed what do you want to call it? An organization? A group? Tell us about your work. What are you doing now to get more people involved, to reach more people, and to help more people understand trauma in general?
This is a tough answer during that time, during that enlightened moment of literally receiving this information of literally, we can change every problem in the world if people would just be nice to each other, okay? Super simple, sounds really trite, totally true. Okay, just be nice. Treat somebody else like you would like to be treated. Don't blame them, stop pointing fingers, don't expect someone to solve your problems. They're your problems to solve. Nobody did this to you. Your experience has given you this struggle so that if you look at it in a new way as happening for you, why is this happening for me? What am I being shown? What am I supposed to learn here? Everything changes. Complete game changer when you shift to see from to, in other words, happening to me, to happening for me. One small prepositional word. That is the message of what is Cozmina, which is a made-up word meaning where coziness meets glamour. It's a long, long story. I started to knit for the women who had taken care of me. I started to teach women to knit as a functional meditation because I got this unbelievably creative download to help others. And that's how it came through for me in this brand of kindness. So other people have these experiences. Other people have these awakenings. You don't have to have a massive trauma, although I believe trauma is an opener. So trauma is like the hammer hitting you on the head. And from that trauma comes pain. Pain is the rocket fuel to change. The rocket fuel to figure it out because you want the pain to stop. And it makes you go out of the box. It makes you consider other opportunities. So spirituality is always right there for people because ultimately it is the end game. But I'm an early adapter. I know this now. The rest of the world is figuring it out as we go. But I think everyone listening to this program understands that children of our generation, anybody under 30, is wired differently than people over 30. We were literally born into a different energetic paradigm. So the answers to all of this stuff lies in enlightenment. So the Cozmina brand, which was what came out of it, was a brand of kindness that spoke to this kind of what we're talking about here. And it was about soothing yourself in tactile ways or through your sensory systems, your taste, touch, sight, smell, and sound, and to allow yourself to be guided by your internal guidance system, which is your intuition.
Well,
we know what we need.
Well, Lisa, as I said, I want to thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. And I am glad, I was looking at the cover and I kept thinking how remarkable it was, how it really, there was something very spiritual about it. And I'm happy to know that it was written by somebody who knew your husband because somehow he captured that moment. And it's a beautiful cover. The name of the book is The Light in 9/11, Shocked by Kindness, Healed by Love. And people can go to your webpage, which you want to tell the name of it? So,
sure. My author page is lisaluckett.com, LISALUCKETT. And it's also available on Amazon.
Yeah, the book's available, online, wherever books are sold, and hopefully in bookstores. And I know that you're already doing many, you know, talks and reaching out to people. And I hope that, with this COVID gets over, that you'll be able to do more traveling around the country, meeting people, talking to people. And perhaps they'll, find strength to find what you did. That kindness is what really counts in life. And you've done a beautiful job with this book. Your children should be very proud, and I know your husband would be, of what you've done and what you've accomplished.
Oh, I can't thank you enough. And so the evolution has taken me to life coaching. So I'm crossing a 20-year finish line here, and now I'm going to just quiet down and always have the concepts of Cozmina, enlightened living, and just share that now more one-on-one. And, speaking when speaking comes up, but for the most part, just serving others in this new way, which is simply fascinating.
Okay, well, again, thank you so much. Really, it's been an honor to talk to you. Lisa Luckett, and the website is lisaluckett.com. Go there, and you can find out more information, read a little bit more about the projects that Lisa's involved in. And my love and my thoughts will be with you on this 9/11. And as all of us, we are all so grateful for what you've done of trying to reach out and teach people about kindness.
Yeah, it's there for all of us if we can just just take a breath and just try to see the calm and the light in every situation is there. We just have to try to see it.
Okay. Thank you again.
Right.
Bye-bye now.
Thank you so much. Nice meeting you. Bye-bye.
Nice meeting you. And we're going to take a commercial break. And when we come back, I have another author. I haven't never spoke to her before, but I'm looking forward to talking to Maddie Day.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you ready to eliminate your home energy bill? Well, get ready to harness the sun. Go EHS, Effective Solar Solutions, by Efficient Home Services. With no upfront costs, you can save money on your utility bill and even eliminate your electric bill altogether with EHS Solar. Call EHS, the number one solar installer nationwide. We know how to customize your home. EHS handles every project in-house with no subcontractors. Remember, no upfront costs, tax breaks, and the best company in the business, Efficient Home Services. Schedule an appointment today at 727-353-3757. Visit our website and download your free buyer's guide to going solar at www.goehs.com. Go solar, go savings, go EHS. Call 727-353-3757 today to talk to our experts.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my next guest, Maddie Day. Well, she's written so many books, I can't say one particular book, because, gosh, this woman writes like crazy. Hi, Maddie Day.
Hi, Patsy, how are you?
Okay, well, I don't know what to call you, actually, because you have another name. I mean, it's always confusing when an author has writes with a bunch of different names. Should I call you Edith Maxwell because that's one of your names, or Maddie? Or I love Maddie Day, by the way. That's a cool name.
Thank you. My parents gave me the name Edith Maxwell, so you can call me that. You can call me Edith, but you can call me Maddie because I write. Right now, I write more books as Maddie than I do as Edith.
Well, maybe I'll call you Maddie because that's one of my favorite names. When I was as a matter of fact, it's so funny. You know, I was, as a kid, of course, you know, all of us, you know, were thinking about being writers, and Nancy Drew was, of course, my go-to book when I was a kid, and I actually wrote a book, and my main character's name was Maddie.
Oh, there you go.
I love that name. It just always stayed with me. And so when I saw Maddie Day, I thought, oh, and the combination of Maddie Day, I thought, well, that's a memorable name. So it's really, I think it's really cool.
Oh, thank you. Thanks so much for having me on, too, today.
Well, you know, it's always so much fun to have Kensington authors on, mostly because I just love the covers, you know? And
yeah.
So, of course,
they do a brilliant job with the covers.
They do. The most recent book I read was No Greater Crime, which is, it's number 9 in, I don't know how many, you write a lot, don't you?
It's number 9 in the Country Store Mysteries. I do write a lot. I've been writing 3 or 4 books a year for some time now, and that's my latest book out. I've just sent my editor a synopsis for book 11 in that series, which will be called Four-Leafed Cleaver, because it takes place at St. Patrick's Day.
You're so clever. I love that. I love that. Oh, that's great. Oh, that's a wonderful title. Wow, you're having fun, I can tell you. You're having fun. And I particularly like this one because, well, I like pancakes. So you have to tell us a little bit about this wonderful, wonderful country store called Pans and Pancakes. And, of course, I'm concentrating on the pancakes all the time. But tell us about this wonderful store and the characters that you developed.
Sure. It's set in a fictional town called South Lick in Brown County, Indiana, which is a beautiful part of southern Indiana. It's hilly and arty, and it looks a little bit like Vermont, in fact, which I live close to. And Robbie was devastated after the sudden death of her mother in California. She was already living in Indiana working as a chef, and her aunt Adele helped her find this rundown country store that Robbie fixed up and started a breakfast and lunch restaurant in. And this is now in No Greater Crime is probably the third year or maybe the fourth year of since she opened the restaurant. And it's going great. It's become the watering hole, like the gathering place for this small town. When there's news, when there's a homicide, that's where people gather to talk about it. And she's got a couple of younger employees, co-chefs, and they all switch off who cooks, who buses tables, who takes orders. And he has a budding romance, and in No Greater Crime, they finally get married.
Well,
so that's sweet.
Well, the character, I think, is delightful. Robbie Jordan is the name of the character. Really, you know, it's always happens when you get a cozy mystery where you relate to the character. And, of course, I'm interested in cooking all the time. My mother made the best pancakes in the world. She got those crispy edges. I don't know how she did it. Mm. You know, just... Yeah. And, of course, you are yourself a great chef, I understand.
I'm an amateur chef. I love cooking. It's no burden to come up with the recipes that are in the back of the book, of every book. So that's no problem. I modeled the store on one that a couple of friends, so I was in getting a doctorate in Bloomington, Indiana, which is the next county over, many, many decades ago. And 2 friends dropped out of the linguistics PhD program and bought this rundown general store and fixed it up and made a breakfast and lunch restaurant. And that was my inspiration for this store. And they served whole wheat banana walnut pancakes.
Oh.
And I've been making those ever since. And so I thought that had to be one of the signature dishes for this restaurant, for Pans and Pancakes. But she also sells, the pans part is that Robbie also sells vintage antique cookware. And every few books she goes out and shops for more. And some of those pieces of vintage cookware have been murder weapons. So
well, and we can mention that this there's a crime here that involves mushrooms, which
there is.
I found very interesting because my brother and sister, they used to be hot shots in business, and they were both executives, and then one one day about 20 years ago, they looked at each other as they were sort of passing. They had a few hours at an airport. One was going one way, one was going the other way. And they said, why? Why? So they decided to be, they'd go back to the farm, which, of course, my brother hadn't seen since he was 3 years old, and become organic farmers. And so they,
great.
Yeah. And so, you know, they gave up all that world traveling and all of that executive side of their life and became organic farmers. And one of the things that they needed to do and they wanted to do was to learn about mushrooms, because they're in northern Michigan. They went up to northern Michigan where we had our 40 acres. And they realized that they might not be picking the right mushrooms. So they actually went to university to take a course in mushrooms.
Yeah, that's fabulous. I took when I was writing this book, even though it was during COVID, I went on an outdoor medicinal mushroom walk in New Hampshire, about an hour north of where I live. And so it was medicinal mushrooms, and it really opened my eyes to walking in the woods, like, oh, that, look at that tree trunk. There's mushrooms growing on it, a bunch of them. But I asked the leader afterwards about poisonous mushrooms, because that's what I was really interested in. Yeah, so you definitely have to know, you have to know your stuff if you're going to pick mushrooms.
Exactly. Well, they got actually a degree from the university. They give them a real certificate that they know their mushrooms, which reassured me a little bit.
One of my series with Kensington, as written as Edith Maxwell, is a local foods mystery series, and there's 5 books in that, and they're set on a small organic farm in in the part of Massachusetts where I live. And I had a small farm, organic farm, a couple decades ago.
Well, that's why I thought I'd mention that about my brother and my sister-in-law. Because, you know, to go from being executives and traveling the world and then deciding to go back to the family farm, which, as I said, my brother hadn't been on since he was 3 years old. It was a shocking experience. The first time they had to get their hands dirty.
Oh yes. Yeah.
And that's also a lovely series that you have going. So you're having fun. I think you're having fun.
I am. I'm living my dream, Patsy. Like, really. I quit my day job 8 years ago, I think, and I'm a full-time writer, and I'm working every day by 7, and I love it. I absolutely love it.
And so you studied linguistics, which is, you know, for a writer, that turns out to be a pretty good thing, because you're a fine writer.
Thank you. It's a really interesting field. I only worked in it for a few years directly, but it really, it taught me research skills. And, of course, I was always working with words, and I have really my whole adult life. Well, my whole life worked with words.
And it comes through in your writing, because you're very descriptive. And as my biggest compliment to an author is always when I say, you painted the picture. In other words, you got me right there in there, and I felt it, and I could see it. And you certainly do that with your stories. And I enjoyed it so much. I enjoyed. I wanted to go there. I want to go to Pads and Pancakes. I said, I need to go there.
I've had people say that. I wish I could eat there. I've had fans say that over and over again.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I mean, that's how I felt. And I thought, well, you know, maybe, you know, somebody will buy that name from you, because it's really great. It's a wonderful concept. We had a nice store here that sold kitchenware. And now when I look back on it, they actually went out of business. And I was thinking, and it was an adorable country store, and they had all sorts of wonderful, new kitchen items, but antique kitchen items. And I think now back, I wish at the time I had said to them, hey, listen, put out some tables here, make some of these, pancakes. We need pancakes. And they might still be in business. Huh?
They might. That's a great idea.
Yeah, they might.
Yeah.
Well, you know, when you are a writer, this is what I love when I say at the beginning of the program, for writers and those who dream of writing, and when somebody, you know, sits down and starts writing, when you wrote your very first book, what was it like? I mean, the feeling of getting it done.
The feeling of getting it done, of course, is fabulous. And I wrote the first four or five books around the edges of a full-time job. So that's, you know, you're really grateful that you finally finish it. But what I discovered when I was writing my first novel, and of course I wrote technical documentation, so I wrote books, but they were documenting how to use software. So I try to distinguish and say my novels. Is when the character surprised me. And I'm just typing this story, and I'm not a big plotter. I don't really outline very much before I write a book. And so I'm writing along, and the first time it happened, it was my farmer, and she was helping out a friend in a restaurant whose wait person hadn't shown up. And so Cam was serving this party of 8 or 10 at a table, and this woman fell off her chair onto the floor unconscious. And I had no idea why she fell off the floor, and I'm writing the book. So I had to keep typing to find out, was she poisoned? Did she have a heart attack? Did she have a stroke? Like, what was it? Was it something in the food? Was it, you know, so... But I had no idea, and the only way to find out was to keep typing. When my character surprised me, that's the miracle of writing. The one thing that keeps me going.
And I want to make special mention about the fact, like Carolyn Hart, you mention other authors in your books. And do you know Carolyn Hart? She was the third guest on Joy on Paper.
I have not met her. Of course, I know her name, but I haven't.
Well, of course, in her books, she's mentioned over the years, she's mentioned hundreds of other authors. And so it's really, I think it's always very special. And I found many of my favorite, my favorite authors, like Mike Resnick, because I read Carolyn Hart's books. And I think people will discover new authors in your books.
Oh, I hope so. So, you know, I write another series as Maddie Day, the Cozy Capers Book Group Mysteries. And they're set on Cape Cod, and my protagonist, Mac Almeida, owns a bike shop. And she's a part of a book group, and they only read cozy mysteries. So every book that I write, the book group is reading another cozy mystery, and they're all friends of mine. Like, I bring in, you know, author friends of mine to be the author of the book that the book group is reading. So you can discover a lot of authors in that series.
Well, I think your writing is fantastic. The latest book or new book or whatever it is, is, I think, just wonderful. And I want to thank Kensington so much, because I appreciate all that they do for all of their authors, because they are the best people. And
they
particularly Larissa, I want to say a special shout out to her. She is fantastic. And
Larissa is the best publicist ever.
Ever. Yeah, she is absolutely. She is amazing. Yeah. An absolute amazing. Yeah. And so a special shout out to Larissa, and a special shout out to everybody that is a cozy mystery fan, because they will really enjoy reading Maddie Day. And what's the website you want people to go to, though?
So Maddie Day and Edith Maxwell share edithmaxwell.com.
Okay.
So you can find all of our books, my books,
right there.
Since I'm both people, and my short fiction and everything there.
Well, Maddie,
and I hope we keep you awake every night reading the book.
Oh, well, you know, you cozy mystery people do. Last night I was awake past my bedtime because I was listening to Carol J. Perry, she had one of these Zoom events at 10 o'clock our time. But, of course, it was 7 o'clock in, you know, over there. It was, and I'm like, oh, my goodness, I don't do 10 o'clock, but I was listening.
I don't either.
So a special shout out to Carol J. Perry and her wonderful Zoom events that she's doing for her books. And
her books are great.
Another great Kensington author. Thank you so much. Thank you again for being on Joy on Paper today. It's been a joy to talk to you.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It's been really nice to talk with you, too.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Take care.
You
keep
too.
Keep reading.
Okay. I keep reading.
Bye.
I don't stop. Okay.
I don't either.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Thanks, Patsy. Bye.
She's so sweet. I like this book so much. And it did get me, as a matter of fact, when today when I get home, my sister Natalie, who is considered the connoisseur of cozy mysteries in our community, when she gets a cozy mystery, when I get a cozy, she always grabs it first. And I'll never forget the day that I came home with the first Carol J. Perry book, and Natalie grabbed it. She always grabs these books, and she read it. She went crazy about it. And I knew right then and there that one day Carol J. Perry's Witch City Mysteries were destined to become a series on the Hallmark Channel. I know it's going to happen, and that's what I'm just waiting for. And meanwhile, we have another wonderful cozy mystery author I want to mention, and that's Rita Moreau, who does our book buzzes. And she is going to be doing a lot more book buzzes this week. And boy, I hope that she's going to do one for this wonderful book, No Greater Crime by Maddie Day. It's a wonderful book. And there are recipes for pancakes in the back. And I'm going to make my sister pancakes to celebrate today, you know, because that's a problem. Once you get pancakes on the mind, you can't get them out unless you actually start making them. And I happen to have some maple syrup from my brother's, it's our family farm. We have two plots, 40 acres, so we have 80 acres. And every year he goes out there and he and his wife get the sap from the maple trees. They are so energetic. And so I have actually maple syrup from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. Youper, we call that Youper, super duper Youper honey. Wow. Oh, that's fantastic. Anyway, everybody, remember what I always tell you. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book or to see them live streaming on... Oh, my goodness. Can you imagine streaming? When is the Jack Reacher series coming out? I hope soon. Anyway, just get out there and start writing, and you never know. Your story, your book might be turned into something wonderful. Wow, I'm just thinking about it. And meanwhile, remember what Lisa Luckett said today. Kindness is everything. And be kind to people and say something nice to somebody today. And I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room because I like to see him there right across from me. And he's saluting me and I'm saluting him because I really should have been a general. I wish I had been a general. Believe me. I would have been a good general, and I would have done things a lot differently. Anyway, everybody, take care and have a good weekend. But remember everybody who sacrificed for 9/11. Bye-bye now.